Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Men Let's Have a Conversation. Today I brought on a relationship expert and coach. He's the host of the You Got This podcast, and I brought him on because speaking to a lot of guys and even my own development of relationships, I saw Andy in action in the program I'm in, and he really got me to think about how I was showing up in relationships from in my past. And some of the stuff he said, I just said, this is a really interesting guy who knows a lot about this stuff in the field. And I brought him on to share some of the questions that I've seen come up around relationships. And today we're going to dive into the topic of deepening a relationship with your partner. So Andy, it's very grateful to have you on this podcast today.
Good to see you, Paul. Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
So you work with guys in general and women, and you've developed a man's program. And so men's work in general is there's such a wide range of it. It goes into different avenues and stuff like that.
Yeah.
How did you find yourself falling into the avenue of relationships? Was it because with your partner, or was it just a feel that you felt that you were most drawn to?
Yeah, I think it's ended up being, and I think this is probably true for a lot of people who end up working in the personal growth field, whether they're therapists or coaches or specialists in some form, it's informed by their lived experience. And ultimately, my journey has been through the hard stuff, through the pain, through the trauma, through the mistakes, through the needing to grow, needing to change. I have had to learn how to navigate that stuff and come out the other side, really. And as a result of that, I'm uniquely equipped with skills because I've had to do that. I got into coaching originally by accident, in the same way that before I was coaching, I was teaching yoga. I got into that by accident. With yoga, I had a running injury, and running was literally my life. And the only way to get back to running was to do yoga after 2 years of having an injury, where I was getting a lot of surgery on my inner thighs and stuff. Nearly had to have my neck vertebrae fused at one point as well. So there were a lot of surgeries and medical interventions that led me to yoga. And then while I was doing yoga, I found one of the byproducts of that was actually being less stressed and understanding that self-compassion could actually be a thing and not just constantly beating myself up and being depressed and anxious the whole time. But then I was still having relationships, and the relationships were, God, they were all over the place. And as a result of being part of a business coaching program, they gave us a mindset coach. And I went to this mindset coach's, went to a one-day event that she was hosting, which was about archetypes. Very interesting stuff. And it was there that I suddenly realized that I might be able to learn about why I was being the way I was in relationships. I didn't have a clue what was going on, other than I just felt maybe I was just shit at relationships. I was broken and maybe I should just stay single. But that was genuinely my belief. I never believed anything could change. Certainly didn't believe I could be anything other than desperately anxious in a relationship, pining for a moment of peace. And actually it was through coaching and understanding about childhood conditioning. And over time, I saw that there was going to be hope. And then fast forward 6 years and here I am now. So I got into relationships purely because that was the thing that I struggled with most. I struggled with communication most, I struggled with conflict the most, avoiding conflict, having a relationship where I was getting something from it, when I was valued and respected and where I could really be myself. And I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with, particularly guys, right? Being able to be ourselves in relationships and not have to wear masks. When we're with the guys, with our school friends or our workmates, maybe there's a mask. Maybe we have to behave in a certain way in order to fit in. And this work that I've done and the work that I do with people individually as couples, and also in the MAN program for men, it is about helping them figure out what their conditioning, what their childhood has actually programmed them to behave in relationships. They then get to understand why certain parts of their relationships aren't functioning in an optimal way. And then we can work on what to do about it. But it's only through my lived experience and then doing the healing work and then getting professionally trained in that and still doing my own work along the way. That's how I ended up in relationships. Try editing that down as an answer.
You hit something there that I hear quite a lot. It's just,
yeah.
I'm never going to find that person. I hear a lot of guys are nearly, they're going through the motions with relationships. My generation is a lot more than the older generation as such. Then you're just saying then that in those relationships that you were having at the time,
yeah,
were you finding that what was happening? Was it just, you were anxious and how did that actually show up? How did you know what were the telltale signs in those destructive relationships and what you're seeing in guys that are, okay, well, this is not good. This is actually causing destruction here.
Yeah, I think there's a lot in that. That's a very nuanced answer, but at a very high simplistic level, I didn't feel safe, but I didn't realize I didn't feel safe. So my behaviors would have been feeling worried, overthinking. There would have been jealousy. There would have been wondering what that person was up to when they weren't with me. Wondering when they were going to message. Were they going to message? When they messaged, what did I need to say back so that they didn't avoid or run away? How not to come across too needy? How not to come across too strong? How could I get them to like me? All of this kind of stuff. So I think about it from the perspective of man psychology, which is strong and safe and empowered and able to see rationally, able to be objective, versus boy psychology, which is where I'm relating everything to something not about me or something that I must have done, or that maybe there's something wrong with me. It was a reflection of my immaturity and me having not understood actually the nuances of human relationships at all. So I would say that when that was going on for me, I was very much creating that situation. Like, I'm not a victim, even when there are abusive relationships. I can't honestly hand on heart say that I was a victim of that stuff, because in reality, my unconscious and my trauma and my attachment wounding was what was directing how I was showing up in relationships, which, guess what, was attracting other people with similar or maybe the opposite kind of wounding. And we'd come together with some kind of frisson of excitement or attraction. There'd be something which felt familiar.
Okay.
Does that make sense? And so I'd go into a relationship and be scared of conflict. And we're probably going to talk about this later anyway, but it was as much my fear of conflict, my fear of abandonment, my fear of rejection, which then colored my interpretation of communication or something that would happen in the relationship anyway. Everything that I was bringing to it, consciously and unconsciously, I was misreading or misinterpreting or overanalyzing. I was doing all of this stuff that I didn't realize that was coming from a lot of unconscious pain that I hadn't dealt with, which was coloring the way that it was. I was wearing a pair of spectacles, which didn't allow me to see clearly. And that's what was going on. And that's always what's going on in relationships when, unless we've done a lot of work and we've done a lot of healing work, if we've done a lot of healing work and we've got good boundaries, then if, we'll probably talk about this later, if a relationship's not working, then we have a choice. But until we've done that work, we might feel we're waiting for the one or all of this other kind of nonsense that we've bought into with the conditioning, whether it's through family, through religion, through culture, through media, love songs, the radio, and Disney and movies, all of that stuff conditions us to believe that love is something that it's not, right? And so we're always wondering whether this is the right relationship or whether there's something better out there. And that's actually a very immature way of looking at things and shows that you need to do some inner work, because there isn't a one. In my experience, there isn't a one. Even with Rage, my fiance, we are still doing the work. We both still have therapists, because we're committed to being the best version of ourselves for each other and for ourselves. And maybe that's not always going to be the case, but my therapist has had a therapist for 20 years and he's been a therapist for 20 years as well. So it's, for me, it's it makes sense to keep working on your stuff, because I wear glasses, right? Because my eyesight's not great. How can I guarantee that my thinking is always right? How can I guarantee that the way I see, interpret a relationship or a situation or a conversation or reaction is actually accurate? How can I guarantee that it's not something from my unconscious coloring the way that I'm seeing things?
That's such a good way of putting it. This, even for therapy as couples, even if you think your relationship is handy dandy or Andy are all roses, and I love that metaphor is my eyesight needs glasses. These are something you have to do to improve in every given situation. And just on that then, so because I often hear she's distant with me.
Okay.
I don't want to go there with, you know what, I'm not that kind of touchy for you, that kind of guy.
And yeah.
So, because emotional distance is something that guys put up a lot. I know this from my own experience. And I've done a lot of work around it myself. It's why I would have put up certain barriers and stuff like that. And
yeah.
And understanding that. So, when are they, from your work with guys, and obviously you help guys around this, what are some of the telltale signs you see with guys that happen that they might not even recognize that they're doing that is creating an emotional distance between them and their partner?
Cool, that's a great question. I think it depends, right? Because let's look at it from a couple of perspectives, right? One perspective might be that the guy is doing or not doing something that creates distance in the relationship, and maybe he's aware of it, maybe he's not aware of it. So assuming that it could be him as the input and the output being distance in the relationship, if he's saying something, I'm not really an emotional guy, I'm not really that touchy-feely, immediately, if we were to have a red flag, that's a great example of a red flag. If you were to ever ask me what's a red flag in a relationship, I'd be have a look at your thinking and the kind of thing, the way you describe yourself in a relationship and what you are and what you're not. And then see if you'd like from somebody else.
That's
so that side of things, whether it's masks or maybe being quite guarded, maybe is another way of putting it. Some people might call it avoidance. That stuff. A man who's not willing to go there emotionally is quite closed off. That's someone that needs to get support, get professional help. If they want to be happy in a romantic relationship, they just have to get support with that, because that's the problem. And a woman might be knocking on the door, but he might see that as pressure. He might see that as criticism. And the thing is, and this is what I've learned in men's work, me being a participant in it as much as being a leader with men's work, when men find challenge to feel an attack, it shows that they need to do some work, because it's a fear of judgment, a fear of rejection, a fear of abandonment. There's an oversensitivity there that needs addressing and needs supporting, right? It's not saying that there's something wrong with that, but there's a wound underneath that. So if a guy isn't able to open up, or if he's not responsive to his woman's challenges, or he feels criticized by it, then there's other stuff going on there. There's pain there. And the origins of that, you and I both know that the origins of being closed off emotionally will be rooted in much earlier experiences in childhood, where having an emotional experience, being able to express that, being able to express anger, being able to express happiness, being able to ask for help, crying, all of that kind of stuff, having an emotional experience wasn't held in a safe way by the dominant caregivers at the time. And in that can also include friends, parents, school, religion, particularly in Ireland, if there are Catholic schools or whatever. There's so many different things that can influence boarding school, for example, as well. So many different ways that children and young boys can be affected by whether they're able to express their emotions freely, whether that's allowed, whether that's encouraged. Acknowledgement, validation, empathy, those things are really important when we're growing up. A sense of belonging, yeah, feeling significant, feeling we're important, that what we feel is important. That's important to our development emotionally. That's how we develop emotional intelligence. Yeah. And if we don't get that consistently, if that's shut down or ignored, or gosh, the amount of, you know, this is something I hear all of the time from clients, right? Whether it's they're just inconvenient or they get in the way, or emotions are always a problem, or don't shout while you're under my roof, whatever it is, if there's this suppression of expression, then of course an adult's going to grow up to feel it's not safe for them to have feelings, let alone express them. And particularly in a relationship where maybe they feel particularly vulnerable at the hands of what they see as a woman who may be quite volatile emotionally, because guess what? She's going to be pretty fucking wound up with a man that is consistently closing off when she wants to get closer, or when she's saying, look, I need this from you. He's going to feel that as pressure, because he's going to be, oh, this reminds you of when I was younger. I just need to shut down. Otherwise, which is the withdrawal thing that men do, because they're getting flooded. The reason they do that is because they're expecting an attack, because that's what the somatic memory, their body is bringing up from something that happened when they were younger. Maybe they were bullied, all of that kind of stuff. It's a lack of safety for a part of them, a big part of them that shows up at that time. So if a man is saying to you in your work, I'm not touchy-feely, all of that stuff could potentially have gone on in their childhoods. And if they're experiencing emotional distance in their relationship with their woman and she's just withdrawing or shutting down, then that could be the case. But it's not, it's just going to be his fault. We attract unconsciously relationships that remind us of our earliest relationships with the person that we were most attached to, whether it was our mother or our father, or whichever caregiver. And so the other partner in that relationship is also going to have some kind of attachment wound going on, whether they're aware of it or not. So if they're not doing the work, their withdrawal, their distancing may also be a trauma response for them.
Yeah.
So it's going on for both parties. But as men, our responsibility is to deal with our shit.
Okay.
Yeah. And then when we've dealt with our shit, then we can see much more clearly when we've done the work, this yourself. When you've done the work, you can see much more clearly what's going on, much more objectively. You might not be able to do it immediately, but because you've done the work, and if you're consistently doing the work, if you've got coaches or therapists, if you work with Paul, or if you join the program, Mind the Man, there will be a constant opportunity to reflect on what's happened, to reflect on what you said, what you did, how you felt, and to then look at that objectively, to look at it from a different perspective, to question, to challenge, to interrogate, so that you can learn about what's actually been going on for you and what may have been influencing that you weren't aware of at the time. So the distancing thing from the guy's side, that could be going on. Or there's an alternative. He could be a nice guy. And if a guy's a nice guy, he's going to avoid conflict the plague, right? He might be a really overt people pleaser. He might, what else do the nice guys do? He might always want to keep the peace. He might constantly be doing things for his woman, constantly giving, and she might be like, too much, right? He might be needy. He might be filled with resentment because he's got these unmet expectations that he hasn't communicated to his partner. He might be passive aggressive, yeah? He might be inconsistent. He might be unreliable. He might not act with integrity. He might be constantly looking to his partner, his woman, for the lead. What are we having for dinner? Where are we going at the weekend? What are we up to? He might not be taking the lead in a relationship, might not be sharing the mental load. Because, you know, women experience this thing called mental load. Even if it's not something that they have to do, they will be thinking about, if they've got a man who is immature, who's being a nice guy, who hasn't done the work, right? They'll be thinking about all of his worries. They'll be carrying all of that shit, as well as how they feel about it and what they can do about it. All of that will be part of their mental load that they'll be carrying on top of everything else. That's, yeah, and cool. She'll just be, no, I don't need another fucking kid.
I was chatting to a female friend of mine a while ago.
Yeah.
She was with a guy that was starting to happen. And I asked her in the end, you just lose respect for him in the end. And she was, yeah, ultimately, that's literally what happened. She just, because she was ended up taking that. The first couple of times she was, oh, this is all right, okay, do you know? But then it kept repeating itself. And she's like,
yeah.
Which is interesting. This is sort of stuff that guys don't get educated on at all, in terms of understanding what's actually going on. And the biggest shift for me was understanding that even though women and men are in the same body, they're very much different species as such.
Yeah, different brains, different biochemistry, different emotional needs, different needs from our social circles and networks. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. And so to counteract, say, in the relationship and stuff like that, say, for instance, for that guy, say, speak to my female friend.
Yeah.
You're speaking to that guy there. What are the signs, okay, you're looking out for when you're speaking to your clients?
Yeah.
And you're listening for when you're speaking to your clients.
Mm-hmm.
When they're talking about the relationships, whereas, okay, this is starting to go downwards and you need to start taking the reins here or your relationship is in trouble. So what are the signs you see in men or in relationships that the top two or three telltale signs that are the most common in relationships that kind of, okay, we're on the rocks here. The relationship is on the rocks.
Withdrawal is a big one.
Withdrawal.
Yeah, that's, I guess we could talk about that as maybe as a further iteration of withdrawal could be seen as stonewalling.
Stonewalling.
And that's where there's a shutdown. That's where there's the silent treatment. That's where there's no communication. There's not a willingness to resolve conflict. The Gottmans would call it turning towards, wanting to navigate through the ruptures. When that's not there, when there's sarcasm is a big one. Sarcasm is aggression, which is shielded in humor. It's passive aggression. It's a toxic communication style, sarcasm in a relationship. I think the Gottmans talk about the four horsemen of the apocalypse. So if this stuff is consistently happening in your relationship and you're not working on it and you're not individually and collectively getting support with it, then you know that your relationship is in trouble. And that's criticism, contempt, passiveness, and stonewalling. So the criticism is pretty obvious, right? If it's lots of you statements, lots of blame statements, there's a lack of accountability from the party that is doing the criticizing. If it's constant disrespect, that's a form of abuse, right? It's you're not validating somebody else's experience. You're telling them that's the problem.
And would that be from both parties as such? Would both parties be at this? Would both sides of the relationship be at this?
Typically? Yeah, or it could just be one person. This is something that I've learned through doing therapy myself, is that in my brain, I used to think it's 50-50 because, hey, I would always like to think that it was somebody else's fault because that made me feel better. Yeah. But the reality is, as men, we have to take full responsibility for everything that we're experiencing, right? Everything in our lives we have co-created.
Okay. That's a big pill to swallow here, because I know a lot of guys clearly are in denial of that side of things. And it was one of the hardest things I had to face.
You share
a year ago when there's a mentor that we both listen to, and when it's just down your head and it's responsibility. And that was the biggest thing that I was I wasn't taking responsibility here.
Yeah.
It's very hard for a lot of guys to accept that.
It's hard for me to accept it still, that I'm literally responsible for everything, whether it's how much money I'm earning, whether it's the state of my relationship, whether it's whether I've got food in my belly, whether I have enough sleep, whether I've worked out, whether I'm tired, whatever, my mood, whether I'm depressed, whether I'm happy, whether I'm anxious, whatever. I'm responsible for creating all of that. Every day, every moment, it just doesn't stop. And it is hard because it forces us to really be adults and to not be. One of the Jungian archetypes is the orphan, and the orphan is this kind of energy of, I can't figure this out for myself. I need someone to help me. I'm not good enough. I don't know how to do it. That constant being stuck in, we might call it the drama triangle, we might call it victimhood, whatever. But actually where we need to get to, and there are processes that we can use, reparenting is a really powerful tool for this, is where we learn to actually be a parent, a father, and a mother to ourselves, modeling the way that I would help someone do it. I'd think about fathering being acknowledging and validating, as well as the arm around the shoulder. So you got this kind of thing. But also the boot up the ass. And then I would think of the mother as inspiring and encouraging and nurturing. And how can we be that with ourselves, even in those moments where it's like, I've got to take responsibility for this? What would a really loving father say? What would a really loving mother say? And that's actually what we have to learn to give ourselves so that we become empowered, so that we trust ourselves to be at hand or whatever comes our way. And that's the journey. That's the heroic journey for every person, particularly for every man. So that we can be the king of our kingdom, so that we can take care of everybody else, we can take care of business. And we don't have to have all the answers, and we don't have to not be afraid. Those things can still be going on. We can still not have a clue what we're going to do next, and we can still be frightened, and we can still take care of ourselves and trust ourselves to figure it out.
This actually really transitions really nicely into what's coming up next. So it's now we're actually talking about how we can actually resolve all the trouble and the emotional distance and stuff like that. And
yeah,
mention it. Take responsibility is one of the things. Or three other ways that you would say to guys, okay, I know you talk a lot about taking leadership, the relationship. So what does that look? You also mentioned earlier challenges when she challenges you.
And yes.
Going on there, and communication as well.
Okay. Okay. Let me do when she's challenging you, this is my interpretation of it. And I've worked with women through coaching and yoga for nearly 10 years, right? So I get what women are challenged with, because I've had thousands and thousands of women tell me over that time all of the ways that their men just piss them off, right? Or aren't consistently giving them what they need. And it's not saying that men, you have to get good at giving your woman what she needs all of the time, because you don't, but you need to understand what she needs, right? And so when she's challenging you, actually what she's doing, whether she's doing it fairly or unfairly, whether she's doing it in what might feel a narcissistic way, doesn't really matter. What she's saying to you is, unconsciously, there is a little girl in me that does not feel safe with your energy and with your behavior.
Right.
And actually, energetically, like, I'm not seeing you being consistent, being trustworthy, being reliable, being in integrity, taking responsibility for your thoughts, your words, and your actions, and for us. I'm not seeing you as someone that can take care of me and my children, whether you had children or not. I don't feel safe with that, because everything that you're doing, your general energy, your joie de vivre, the way that you're sitting on the sofa, the way you are when you get up in the morning, how you're being, I'm not seeing that. And I need that to feel safe. So it might be bitching at you because, I don't know, you haven't taken the bins out. But actually what it is, it's when you take care, what she's really saying is, when you take care of things, I feel safe. And when you don't, I have to take care of them. I have to step into this role of masculine. I have to be the leader. I have to be the mother. I don't want to be your fucking mother. And I also don't want to take on too much masculine energy, because I'm already doing that in my job. I'm already maybe being a parent. I'm already maybe looking after my parents or whatever else, taking care of my friends. I don't need this load that you're not carrying. You need to figure it out. And so she's calling you up, because what she wants is you to be an equal, a partner, a teammate.
I love that, Jack.
And I'm gonna, yeah, calling you up to be her equal. Be her equal. Doesn't mean that leadership in a relationship doesn't mean you have to do everything and take control of everything and be tyrannical, but it does mean that you take care of business, you take care of stuff, you consult your teammates, whoever does whatever tasks or jobs or whatever, that could be interchangeable. It almost doesn't matter, but it's that level of communication where you're not asking permission and you're not asking her what needs to be done. Like, you know it, and you might be saying, hey, listen, I'd really like to do something at the weekend. Did you have any plans? Did you have anything in mind? Or can I come up with some ideas? And then it can go on to, if you're looking to really make the relationship work, then it goes on to create a bit of mystery, being more spontaneous. Because spontaneity and fun is something that, you ask any woman what they want in a long-term relationship, spontaneity and fun will come up. They love to be surprised. And that's because you paid attention to what they need, how they to spend their downtime, what their interests are, what makes them happy, what makes them feel special. You've paid attention to that closely. And then you match that and you do something to give them that kind of experience that makes them feel special. And that becomes a turn on for them, particularly when it's a surprise. So that's one thing you can do. And that will gradually, you know, the challenging will always be there from a woman. The feminine is there to call the masculine up, and the masculine is there to help the feminine feel safe. Like, we have jobs to do. as well as to love each other and acknowledge each other and nurture each other and fuck each other and all of that other amazing stuff we do in a relationship.
Speaking of, because you just said something there, when that man kind of goes into that masculine and takes role, the sex.
Yep.
Why is that?
Why is it that the sex gets better? Why
the feminine feels more available to give herself in times like that?
It's really basic. The reason that sex works or doesn't work in a relationship is because both partners have to not be carrying a lot of stuff. They need to not be really stressed, first of all. Yeah, so the stuff that's going on in their heads and in their lives, they have to feel in their bodies. They have to not be carrying a lot of shit. If there's constant conflict or constant bickering or someone's pulling more weight than somebody else and there's resentment, you're not even going to be in the same kind of headspace to want to have sex. Yeah, so that stuff, you have to find a way to park that stuff. And if you can't, then it's because there's too much and your nervous system is chronically dysregulated. So finding a way to deal with the mental load and the stress is the first thing. So if you've got two teammates playing on a team, supporting each other, that takes the stress down because you're going to feel supported. You're going to feel like that person's got your back. Yeah. So that's one way that's automatically going to improve intimate relationships. And also because when a man is consistently in integrity and doing what he says he's going to do and taking care of business, the woman is going to feel more safe. She's going to feel more open and receptive to him just naturally as a result of that. If she's not having to do and preempt and chase and follow up and ask and direct because she's in a masculine, then when she's not having to do that because he's doing that, then she can drop in.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting and it's also fun to watch it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you'll find that when the man is taking care of the business, then you'll find that the affection that you had at the beginning of the relationship, that will start to come forwards again from the woman. You notice it because she'll be touching your hand or she'll be cuddling you, coming up to you for cuddles, or she'll be rubbing your arm or being playful. When that stuff starts to reappear in your relationship, it's because you're taking responsibility in the relationship. It's not a burden. We have to accept it's our duty as men to carry stuff, the same as it is for a woman. And the reason that we find that difficult as men is because we're not able to take care of ourselves and love ourselves through the challenge to do that reparenting. But when we can do that, and when we're around other guys who are in relationships, this stuff is super common, right?
That's a really good point here. And it moves on to communication.
Yeah.
And also we touched on this earlier on about the emotional distance, it being emotional.
Yeah.
There is it being emotional and there's offloading to your partner, which is different things we have to consider here.
Yeah.
And this is what, when we're communicating certain things, that's why you and I both know from the Wake Man Project, a group of lads.
Mm-hmm.
Things you want to be communicating to your partner and things they're for the guys. That's for the guys to help me.
Yeah.
True. You're hiding things from your partner either, but it's better to come from a lad that's going to give you that kick up rather than...
I struggled with this, because I would think that I needed to... I'm a recovering nice guy, right? So I used to think that talking about my feelings was what I needed to do because women wanted men to talk about their feelings.
Yeah, I was thinking...
It is not. I'm not saying that women don't want to hear how you're doing. Like I will talk to Rach and I'll be like, yeah, I'm feeling a bit anxious this morning or I'm feeling quite stressed. And she might ask me why and what I think's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then that'll be it. We'll have a short conversation about it. It won't go on. And then it's up to me to do something about dealing with it. Yeah. And I take it to my therapist or I take it to my group or I process it myself. Yeah. Different ways of dealing with stuff. If it's something that keeps on occurring and Rach is aware of it, what she'll say to me is, I trust you to figure it out or sort it out. It'll be one of those two things, right? And it's, if we've got stuff going on for us, the people that are going to understand it the most are going to be other guys because there's a lot of commonality in the challenges that we face in our day-to-day lives, the stresses, the burdens that we carry, regardless of our jobs. Fathers are going to have similar challenges, right? Across the board. business owners are going to have similar challenges. Men in relationships where the woman wants a baby, or men in relationships where there's a lot of conflict, they're going to have similar challenges, right? So we take that stuff away from the relationship, especially when we're first processing the challenges we're having in the relationship. We take them outside of the relationship to other people so we can get a clear perspective on it and be objective on how we are feeling and how we're experiencing it. And then we can take it back to the relationship and have a discussion with our partner about it. But it is, it's really simple. It's, we can be honest in our relationship, but we also need to be cognizant of the fact that what we say is going to be, it's going to have an effect on the other person. And it doesn't mean that we can't be open about, if we're struggling financially, have that conversation. If you're struggling with your job, have that conversation. Be honest, but deal with the depths of your feelings about it elsewhere.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Does that make sense? So that you get to process the emotional stuff outside of the relationship, but you can be really objective and you can be fact-centered in the relationship so that your partner's aware.
Yeah, yeah. So it's allowing them to be aware and dealing with the deeper side of it elsewhere.
Getting support for the stuff you're struggling with.
It also allows you to say, if you're angry or pissed off over something, blah, even the anger alone was scared a woman, to deal with that and then to come back to her in an objective manner, whereas, listen, I've dealt with this, and but this is what's actually going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Because yeah, anger might scare a woman. If that's the case, that's probably something that you both need to have a conversation about anyway, because is it anger or is it aggression that she's experienced in the past from men that she's decided is anger? Because actually anger is how we set boundaries, right?
Okay, so it's, my apologies around that. It's actually being snappy around. So
yeah, so exploding, being reactive. Biting someone's head off. It's, no one likes it, right?
Yeah.
And no one deserves to be on the receiving end of it. But guess what? When you're in a relationship, who's going to cop it? The person you're in a relationship with, right? But if that happens, you got to be a man and just say, look, I am sorry.
Yeah.
I spoke out of turn. I was triggered, and yeah. I need to deal with that. It's not your fault. This is something that's come up in me because of something that happened, and I'll take care of it. I'll deal with it.
Yeah. And there's the really important piece here, is that conversation that you have. It's the reaction after the reaction, because sometimes you do react.
Yeah, good. It's going to happen in relationships. There's nothing wrong with reacting. It's just what you do afterwards. Conflict is the most healthy thing you can have in a relationship.
Okay, let's dive a bit into that then.
Yeah, that's part of communication, right? And so when we're fighting, one of the questions you asked me to think about was effective ways to resolve conflict. And it's just two different people with two different value systems, from two different environments, from two different cultural backgrounds, from two different families, from two different parents, from many different generations of grandparents and great-grandparents and ancestors and blah, 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 coming together and having a difference of opinion. But if you think about it, there's so much that's different. How can we expect to not see things differently? Me and Rach, examples, right? Doing the dishes, cooking food and either leaving everything in the sink or tidying up afterwards. Things like how you put the fucking toilet roll on the toilet roll holder, whether you do the washing at night, whether you do the laundry in the morning, whether you hang it out straight away, whether you leave it in there, whether you have to hang it out the line, whether you have to hang things on hangers, whether you iron your pillowcases or bed sheets, all of these things. And then you've got how you need to speak to me and what tone of voice and how you need to treat me and whether you hold the door open and whether you cook dinner for me. And all of these are other preferences that we have unconsciously can easily create conflict. And so the first thing is to understand that it's just two different people coming together. And conflict is always an opportunity to understand that other person better, to understand why something is upsetting them or why something means so much to them. I don't want to get all therapeutic on you, but the really kind of therapeutic question you could always ask your partner is, and there are definitely things that you can do as well to work through conflict really effectively. But one of the questions could be, can you help me understand why this means so much to you? Because you're important to me. I care about you. And our love is what sustains this relationship. And I want to be in a place of love with you, even when you're upset. So can you help me understand why this is so important to you? What does it really mean to you? That's a coaching stroke therapeutic question, right? But you're going to, the other person's then going to be able to tell you why. Because my dad used to speak to me that, or it may, I had an old boss, or my last boyfriend, or I don't know how to do this, or I feel so much pressure, or, and then you're, fuck, it actually didn't have that much to do with the issue that we were crying about. It was about something else. And maybe they didn't understand that. But guess what? When you're able to do that, your partner's going to feel seen and heard and validated and acknowledged. And they're going to be, oh my God, he cared.
Cares, yeah.
And then everything's going to change. So you, and so that's known as turning towards. So it's trying to understand your partner.
Turning towards.
Can so rather than turning away, right?
Can you help me understand why this means so much to you? That's such a great way to open that conversation, isn't it?
Yeah. It's, yeah. Why is this so important? What's your fucking problem? Which we might say when we're pissed off, right? Why now? What's wrong with you?
What are you on about?
Can you help me understand why this means so much to you? Why is this important to you? What about this is important to you? Let me understand that, because I want to be on your side. I want to be on your team. Another thing to make sure that you regularly come back to is that you're on the same team. It's you and your partner against the problem. And I know that sounds really cliched and Jay Shetty kind of podcast quote, but it really is, because it's the wounding, it's the trigger that's come up. So you're having to look at that together. What is that really about?
What is that really about?
Yeah, because when you figure that out, that's what's coming up. That's what I'm feeling. I'm feeling taken for granted, or I feel I'm having to do this all of the time. I don't feel supported. Ah, okay, that's how I feel. So actually, if you were to, Rach used to have this all of the time about laundry and the dishes, and now it's, we fought for, I don't know, the first year we lived together, constantly about it. Even though we're both relationship coaches, we fought constantly about it. And then we got to this point where we were able to express more what it meant. I don't want you to be my father was a thing that Rach came from, the perspective she came from. From me, it was, I don't want to feel like I'm taken for granted. And now it's, I'm able to say, appreciate what you appreciates, right? So tell people what they're doing well and they'll do more of it, right? Now I'm able to say, God, I felt so supported when you did that. I felt so loved. And then I realized that actually my number one love language wasn't actually words of affirmation or quality time. My number one love language to receive love is acts of service. When she does things to help me, to support me, to unburden me, I just feel like, oh my God, I don't have to carry all this shit on my own. It's just all of the stress drops away when I feel supported. So learning your partner's love language, what they need to receive, is really helpful when you're navigating conflict.
That's great. In terms of, it's funny how this is actually rolling out, because I was just going to say, what are some of the things you can actually do? And is in exercises and learning a love language.
That's a fun one. You can do a love languages quiz on the internet, which I don't know, it takes like 5 minutes or something.
There's another one you just brushed off of there, is having that check-in. So do you have regular check-ins, and do you recommend regular check-ins?
A therapeutic thing that me and Rach did with a tantra coach that we worked with was really good. And even though we don't do it anymore, we just constantly check in with each other anyway. And so a really simple thing that you could do is just at different points of the day, just ask your partner how they're doing, how the day's going, and just fucking listen. Fully pay attention.
Yeah.
Don't be on your phone. Don't be thinking about something else. Listen to them. Who are they? What are they doing at work? How many meetings are they having? How did the meetings go? How are they feeling? Have they eaten? Did they get enough sleep? All of that stuff. All of the basic stuff. Are they seeing their friends? Are they going to the gym? Pay fucking attention. Know what they're doing. That's one thing. So someone is going to feel you're in the game with them. And then another process that really worked well for me and Rach was this idea of a connection date. And a connection date is where you sit down and one of you is the speaker and one of you is a listener, and you just wear hats. And when that person is speaking, they can speak about anything. They can speak about how they feel about themselves, how they feel about the relationship, how they feel about you. And your job is to listen. So you're an objective listener. Your job is not to take offense. It's not to defend.
Right.
It's not to justify. You just listen. Just let them vent. You set a timer. And then when you're done, you set a timer for 5 minutes, let them talk. And then the next 5 minutes is you making sure you understand what they meant. Asking them questions. Can I just be clear? I think I heard you say this. What did you mean by that? Or what I took from that is X, Y, Z. Is that what you meant? So you're going back and asking clarifying questions to make sure that you completely understand what they meant. So in your head, you're not creating stories about what it meant. You're not interpreting, you're not misinterpreting, you're not projecting. You're just there to listen. So you've got a perspex screen, and what you're saying to them is just say whatever you need to, right? And this screen is going to catch it. And through this screen, I'm going to be able to absorb it, and I'm going to really get to understand how you feel. Yeah, there's no judgment. I'm not going to interrupt you. I'm not going to be defensive. My role is just to listen so I can understand you better and what's going on with you better. That's my role. And then you swap. Yeah. And doing that, giving that to couples that I've coached, doing that 3 times a week, 15 minutes, 3 times a week, where they just sit down, they put it in the diary, 7 o'clock at night after dinner, eat first, don't be hangry, eat first, and then just do it.
And how do you find that changes the dynamic of the relationship?
Over time, what it's doing is it's helping people understand each other better. So if there's withdrawal, if there's a bit of a disconnection, it helps people. When people feel that they are being listened to, that what's going on for them is important to the person that they're with, when they feel that they're getting acknowledgement, when they know that their experience is acknowledged, when they know that their feelings are validated, when someone's in it with them, when they receive empathy, they're the 5 things that any human being needs, right? When they get that, they're getting all of their emotional needs met. Okay. Yeah, so when that becomes a practice, then they're going to feel more connected to that other person, because that other person is starting to meet their emotional needs. They're starting to listen to them, to see them, to hear them, yeah, on a regular basis. And then outside of that practice, that will start to shift, because in conversation, you'll be listening, you'll be more present, and you'll be able to ask for that when your partner's not giving it. Rachel last night said to me, Andy, I need you to be present. Can you put your phone down? I don't feel you being present with me. Yeah, so I put my phone down. When you can get to that point, asking for what you need is really simple.
And that goes for both sides of the scales.
Yeah, always.
A lot of guys struggle to ask for what they need after.
I don't know what they need. You ask a bloke what he needs or what he wants from life, he's like, I got a fucking clue, most guys.
So that self-discovery. Look, a lot of things start with that inward discovery of yourself in a way. So that's interesting, the whole connection time 3 times a week. And you recommend 3 times a week?
Yeah, I think it's a really nice rhythm, because it just gives you a chance to gradually work into things. But when you're doing that, my recommendation is that you've got a coach to help you, a therapist to help you unpick that stuff and how you're feeling about it and your judgments about it and your worries or insecurities or anxieties or whatever might be coming up, so that it helps you progress that kind of thing and you can process it as well. I think support during that process is helpful. But also, if you've not done any kind of self-development work, just try it and see how it goes.
Yeah.
And if you have done self-development work, then you're probably more aware of where having somebody outside of you supporting you with that could be useful.
And at the end of the day, and you've said this several times throughout this podcast, is you're in it as a team. It's down to you to understand each other. Playing a game of football or whatever sport you're into, each player plays a specific role for that reason. And the other players around them know that role because they train together, they practice together, they do all this stuff together. That in itself is teamwork. And you mentioned it there, doing these things, those connection pieces and stuff like that, that's all part of the teamwork that develops.
And yeah.
Relationship.
Yeah, I think it's really powerful. Things that I did a lecture at the weekend, a wellness festival that happens in Edinburgh a couple of times a year, to women, and most of the women were either relationship coaches or women's coaches. And the lecture was about what men need in relationships. And one of the things that I said that men need more than anything is to hear, I trust you to figure it out. So that it's a woman saying to a man, I think you've got what it takes. I see you as the man in the relationship. I see you as my man. I trust you to be able to figure it out. So if you're having...
Line. It's such a powerful line, really.
Yes. Think about it, right? Rach is the senior leader in her organization. She's an incredible leader. She's just got another promotion. And one of the things that we forget about leadership is that talking somebody up and encouraging them is such an important part of helping somebody developing people, as well as challenging them, as well as getting them to take on responsibilities, as well as getting them to see where they need to step the fuck up. Actually encouraging somebody regularly, like, it's forgotten, almost it's a forgotten art, like, how important that is. Because when we feel appreciated, when we feel encouraged, it gives us a lift, it gives us a boost. No one is immune to that. And when we can do that to each other, when we can talk each other up and build each other up in a relationship, as well as call each other up and challenge each other, it means that as individuals, we're helping each other grow. We're not in this codependent state where whatever else is going on, and we're not reliant on that person to save us. Yeah. But you're doing the work, I'm doing the work, and I trust you to figure this stuff out. Really powerful.
Brilliant. It's given me a lot to think on myself. So guys, Andy, thank you very much.
Thank you for
coming on the show today. We've dove into a lot, unpacked a lot around emotional distance, seeing when your relationships are on the rocks. Then we went through a couple of things to improve your relationship, and we finished off there with some great actual methods, things, tangible things you can take away today and go ahead and deepen the relationship with your partner. So Andy, I appreciate you once again for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Paul. God bless you.